Tampa Bay's TAN Talk. Entertaining and informative radio for the Sunshine State.
You may be owed some money. After 911 and 411, call 541. That's 727-541-1741. Call Gulfstream Motorsports for a diminished value report. Due to my 28 years experience in the auto salvage business, I'm very good with wrecks. So if your car's been involved in a wreck, call me for a diminished value report. Call 727-541-1741. You may be owed some money for the lost value of your repaired vehicle. And visit us at GulfstreamMotorsports.com.
Looking for car shows? Then look no further than flacarshows.com. On your computer or on your mobile device, flacarshows.com is a comprehensive list of automotive events, plus videos and news articles. Whether you're looking for car shows, cruise-ins, meetups, automotive festivals, cars and coffees, or anything else relating to an internal combustion engine, then this is a site for you. Check it out online or on your phone at flacarshows.com.
Carl Foreman's The Guns of Navarone. The greatest high adventure of our time. With a cast as exciting as the story it tells. Gregory Peck. David Niven. Anthony Quinn. Stanley Baker. Anthony Quayle. James Darren. Irene Pappas, Gia Scala, Alistair MacLean's best-selling novel, Live to the Hilt on the Islands of the Aegean Sea.
This is Gregory Peck speaking. And I'd like to tell you something about The Guns of Navarone, because it's the most unusual film in which I've ever appeared. I play the role of Mallory, the man whose job it is to lead six expert cutthroats and saboteurs on a desperate and impossible mission.
Watch out! Ah! Help me! Help me!
What makes it even more desperate and impossible is that some of us hate each other even more than we do the enemy.
That's all right. Pretty good partner you've got there yourself.
He's going to kill me when the war is over.
You think that you've been getting away with it all this time, standing by. Well, son, your bystanding days are over. You're in it now, up to your neck. They told me that you're a genius with explosives. Start proving it. You got me in the mood to use this thing. By God, if you don't think of something, I'll use it on you.
The Guns of Navarone is crowded with action and excitement. But it is even more than great adventure. Over and above its tremendous thrill, this is a story of human beings, each with his intense personal fears, his deep personal conflicts, each with his moments of triumph and tenderness. This is a story of unrivaled courage.
Houston!
And suspense.
Give up quietly, gentlemen. Unless you want a great many innocent people killed as well as yourselves.
Everybody stay exactly where you are. The party's over. Somebody's stepped on the cake. Which means that there is a traitor in this room.
The Guns of Navarone, I promise you, is probably the most exciting film you will ever see.
Yes, sir, Mr. Peabody.
Hey, Scott.
Peter Brock here from BRE Racing and AeroVault Trailers. Listen to Nostalgic Radio and Cars, the best automobile show in the Southeast.
Okay, listeners, welcome. You're tuned in to Nostalgic Radio and Cars, and I'm your show host, Robert. Run to your computers and Google Tantalk1340.com, and you can see us live here in the studios in downtown Clearwater. Don't forget to check out our website, GulfstreamMotorsports.com, where you can find out all about us. And if you missed any of our past shows, don't forget to check out NostalgicRadioandCars.com, where you can listen to all our past radio shows. So, good evening, everybody. How you doing? Good evening, Juan. Juan's in the driver's seat tonight, and Bobby is in the co-driver's seat. So, hello, Bobby. How are you? And Bill from Only in America, or the Only in America Minute, just walked back in. So hi to Bill. And don't forget, check his show out. He's always right before me. So he sets the stage for me. Thank you, Bill. Anyway, all right. So the past couple weekends, I was on the road a little bit. There was a couple events. 2 weeks ago, we did the American Muscle Car Museum over in Melbourne, Florida. That was kind of interesting. And I really enjoyed that. The guy has Mark Pielock is his name, and you need to Google AmericanMuscleCarMuseum.com because he has almost events there just about every week. So the week I was there was a British car show, a British and European car show. This past weekend they had all electric cars, but I'm not interested in electric cars. And so what I did is I decided to go to St. Augustine for the Riding into History event. If you tuned into our show last week, you probably heard me talking a little bit about it. Riding into History is pretty much one of the largest motorcycle shows on the Eastern Seaboard. It used to be up at the World of Golf, but it's now at this St. Augustine Classic Car Museum. I'm amazed at how many classic car museums there are in the state of Florida that are actually hosting events, which is actually a good thing. I mean, there's a lot of guys out there that have a little bit extra coin, if you want to use the slang. And they're putting together, here we go, anyway, so these guys are putting together these car show events, and most of these collections are non-charitable organizations, so what they do is they have these functions there, car shows and miscellaneous other automotive-oriented or motorcycle-oriented functions, and then a lot of the proceeds are donated to a local charity, which is a good thing. It's a novel thing, and I'm glad that people do that. One thing about Americans, we are very charitable. Car guys, very charitable. In fact, a few weeks ago, I went to another one. It was called Old School Hot Rods, and that's my friend Craig, something like that, whatever it is. He was up there, and of course, my buddy Vic Piano from Cigar City Car Concourse, he was there too, and there was a lot of really cool cars up there at that particular event, and that's the beauty of this, because the car community is kind of like, yeah, we don't care about politics, we don't care about religion, there's nothing we can do about it anyway, but we can burn fuel. Now, you're crossing the line when you push this electric crap down our throats, up our whatever, and that's not going to happen. Now, I will say, I'll hand it to some of these other manufacturers. The hybrid, yeah, we're going to get Lauren back on. We'll talk about that. The other stuff that they're working on, the hydrogen motors, like I said, the hybrids and the car and the hydrogen motor stuff, it's got potential. And then, of course, Porsche's got their special concoction that they're mixing, and as well as other manufacturers, for internal combustion engines, this really new special fuel that they're creating basically in a laboratory. So that's kind of cool, too. So there is hope for us. Anyway, a couple upcoming events is, well, obviously, if you want to find out where all the car shows are, you go to flacarshows.com. You can find out all about the upcoming car shows in the state of Florida. This weekend coming up is a couple events. One I'd like to go to, I'm not sure I'm going to go to, but it's the All Porsche Swap Meet. I went to it last year. It's up in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. It's always exciting. There's almost like 1,000 Porsches that show up there and just gobs and gobs of parts. I mean, that's where you want to go. If you're fixing a Porsche, restoring a Porsche, or you need parts for your Porsche, that's where you want to go. But the same weekend is HSR, which is Historic Sports Car Racing. It's at Road Atlanta. It's called the Mitty, Walter Mitty. It's a pretty amazing race and some pretty amazing cars on there. If you go to our Facebook page, every once in a while I post stuff on there, so that one I'm really looking forward to. But anyway, back to Riding into History. Riding into History had probably some really interesting motorcycles there this year. In fact, there was a guy by the name of, let me see if I get the name right, Tony Narcusi, something like that. But anyway, this gentleman is 87 years old. He's 5 foot four, or he was 5 foot four. He's probably 5'2" now. And he still is a crazy wild man on a motorcycle. And he was started out racing bikes probably in the 50s in the military service over in Japan, actually. And then kind of migrated here to the United States, built bikes, worked on bikes, and then got a job with Kawasaki. And he's also very instrumental in developing the three-cylinder Kawasaki motorcycle race engine, which ultimately found its way into the production engine. And so we're looking forward to having him on the show, because for a guy that's 87 years old, he could outride most of us. You know, you, me, and the next guy that are really, really good. And I'm not really, really good. So I'm looking forward to having him on the show. Then I met this other guy. His name is Hot Rod Robert, and he's out of DeLand, and he's got kind of an interesting background. Cool guy. Big shout-out to him as well. And he was buddies with Tony, and they were kind of like hanging out, and they saw my media credentials and said, hey, like, what do you do? And I say radio. And they said, oh, you need to interview this guy. So one thing led to another. So check out our Facebook page, because I've got some pictures up there with Tony, myself, Hot Rod Robert, and a couple other cool guys. So, again, you know, on a Nostalgic Radio Cars, it's about the legendary and fascinating names in motorsports and, you know, motorcycles, boats, you know, music, obviously. So we got some interesting people lined up for that as well. And so this is kind of like really neat stuff. But anyway, inside this museum, and it's owned and operated and founded by a gentleman by the name of Sidney Hobbs. And I guess he was in the medical equipment business for a long period of time. So he had a little extra coin and decided to build a building. It's about 30,000 square feet. So he basically put together a collection of really amazing cars. And they're cars all to his liking. And there's a variety. There's a lot of Corvettes, because he's pretty much a Corvette guy. But he had a Thunderbird in there. He had some Ford trucks in there. He had a 428 Cobra Jet Mustang, which is actually kind of a notchback coupe. Four Trans Ams. One in particular caught my attention. Obviously, he had a 70 Lucerne Blue Force automatic car. Or it might have been Force Bay, I'm not sure. But he also had a Brewster Green 73 Trans Am. That's one of my favorites. Okay. I definitely like the 70 and 73 Trans Am. They, bar none, those are cool cars. And so I was looking at that. Now, in 73, Trans Ams came in Buccaneer Red, White, and Brewster Green. And the predominant color was red and then white. And one or the other. So I'm not sure, but that's what the bulk of the cars were. Rumor has it that they only made less than 250. His thing says 143 Brewster Green cars. Most notably, the most famous Brewster Green Trans Am was the one that John Wayne drove in the movie Mac Q. And it did not have a bird. It was bird delete. And you could actually order it that way. So the one in this gentleman's museum was also bird delete, which was kind of cool. Brewster Green, it had a tan interior, which is kind of odd. Usually they're black. Or once in a while, you might see a white one in there. But had the horse collar seats, the luxury seats in it. And that means probably the door panels were also the deluxe models. Excuse me. But anyway, it was a pretty car. But his little billing there said 143. Now, again, you got to break that down. Is it 143 with automatics? Is it 143 Brewster Green with four speeds? Is it 143 Super Duties? Automatic, Super Duty, four speeds. So yeah, I don't know what it is. But let's just take a wild guess. Let's just say there was less than, of the 11 or 12,000 Trans Ams they built that year, or maybe it was 7,000, I'm not sure. Less than 500 were Brewster Green four-speed for cars. Something along those lines. Anyway, that was pretty cool. By contrast, oh yeah, then he had a 70 SS, or 70 Z28 RS front-end car, which I always liked the RS split bumper. Beautiful car. He had 63 split window in there, I believe. And almost everybody that has a Corvette collection has a 63 split window. There were some other interesting cars in there. There was a 69 Super B or Coronet RT convertible. That's odd. You don't see that very often. He had a 66 Plymouth Fury 3 convertible. It's another car you don't see in a collection very often. 73, 74, 71, 74, 5, or 6 Eldorado convertible. You see those a lot. Trucks, you know, a bunch of those in there, you know, early 50s trucks, kind of cool. And, oh yeah, countless motorcycles inside, and a Schwinn fastback bicycle. So, pretty cool stuff. By comparison, now he had maybe 70, 80 cars in there. The car that he had, it was out back, though, that was real interesting, was an Alpina. And if you Google it, it's a Renault Alpina. It's kind of a really cool, sporty, kind of Porsche-oriented kind of car, you know, like that, like fast. Actually, the French police actually used to drive those because they were pretty fast. And that's back in the day in the 60s when they had no speed limits on the French highways, the Italian Autostrada, the German Autobahn, the Swiss highway. And So you could speed, and they needed fast cars to chase everybody down because radios only worked so far, and then, you know, that was it. And you, if you're out of range, you're out of range. Anyway, having said that, by comparison, the American Muscle Car Museum, he has 400 cars. He has the largest collection of 4 GTs on the planet. Again, go to our website, our Facebook page, Nostalgic Radium Cars Facebook page, and you will see some amazing cars, amazing pictures. And there's a lot of cars outside too, really interesting cars, European cars, German cars, even a French car or two were there. So pretty cool stuff. But anyway, we're going to take a break right now. We're going to go to a commercial, and then we're going to get ready for our guest. We've got a very special guest coming on because there's a very special event coming on this weekend, which I hopefully will be able to attend, one or the other. I'm not sure yet. That's a surprise. You'll find out next week when I get back from wherever that might be. In the meantime, you tune into Nostalgic Radio and Cars. Juan is going to, well, he's not a drop the needle in the groove kind of guy, so I'm going to have him slide in a tape, a quad track, and he's going to play some music. Why don't you go ahead and fire up that song real quick? Now, this is a little Dire Straits, and I believe it's called Telegraph Road. So you tune into Nostalgic Radio and Cars. Don't touch that dial. I'll be right back.
Time ago came a man on a train, walking 30 miles with a sack on his back, and he put down his load where he thought it was the best, made a home in the wilderness, built a cabin and a winter store, and he plowed up the ground by the cool lake shore. The other travelers came walking down the track, and they never went further, no, they never went back. Then came the churches, then came the schools, then came the liars, then came the rules, then came the trains and the trucks with their load, and the dirty old tram was the telegraph road.
Changed. I want the world to never forget my name. Our name.
Signor Ferrari, in my opinion, you make the best cars in the world. But with all my Ferraris, there is a problem. The clutch. I have a solution. If you consider a partnership, Ferrari, Lamborghini.
Go back to your tractors, farmer.
Car that doesn't exist yet, one that is as strong and powerful and as unforgettable as the bull. I'm going to build it.
How long will it take? Can't be done.
If it doesn't work, you'll lose everything.
You want me to be like everyone else?
It's not impossible until we fail.
In 6 months in Geneva, people will be looking for the next Ferrari. What they will find is the first level king.
That's something new. I don't know if this would work.
We'll be ready for this one day.
Tell me why you think that the world needs another luxury car.
It's perfection that I am after.
Don't
care about me.
The only thing that matters is a great Lamborghini.
What do you want me to do?
Why are we here? To make a car.
To make the best car.
I have a responsibility to tell them what you're doing.
He's too uneducated to understand what he doesn't know.
What do you see?
Lines on a napkin. What do you see?
You buy a Ferrari when you want to be someone. You buy a Lamborghini when you are someone. I give you Lamborghini GT.
Das ist Jochen Maas, hallo. Und Sie hören Nostalgic, Radio und Autos. Wunderbar.
Okay, we're back and you're tuned in to Nostalgic Radio and Cars. I always love it when Jochen Maas does that because he does that in Deutsch and German. Yeah, weiß. Okay, it's time to introduce our special guest for the evening. I've given you plenty of hints of what we're going to be talking about this evening, but this gentleman is now the current president of HSR, which I've been a longtime member of and fan of, and that's the Historic Sports Car Racing. And I'm delighted to welcome to the show this evening, Christopher Ward. Christopher, how are you this evening?
Robert, good evening, sir. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
I'm delighted to have you on the show, and I'm really looking forward to the event this weekend. Now, how about you? We're going to be talking about HSR, but I threw the little Lamborghini thing in there, so I figured what you could do is kind of give us a little bit of background, introduce yourself to the our listeners, and tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got where you started to where you are now.
I'll give you the potted history, otherwise we'll be...
Okay.
Here all night, and you'll be switching me off. the short version of a very long story is, as you can tell, not originally from Detroit, Michigan, which is where I reside now and I'm based out of, but came over from the United Kingdom to start a marketing business in 1999, and along with that worked with fantastic brands. Such as Bentley Motors and Automobili Lamborghini, a lot of the high luxury brands, Bugatti, Audi, Porsche, you name it, primarily in the Volkswagen group. And during that period of time, was approached in 2012 by Lamborghini to help them start up Lamborghini Squadra Corsa here in North America, which is the motorsports arm of Automobili Lamborghini. And one thing led to another, and before I knew it, I had left the business that I was working for and became an employee of the wonderful Lamborghini brand as their head of motorsports, and then started the single make series, Lamborghini Super Trofeo, the introduction of their GT3 product here into North America with the Huracan GT3, running cars in the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship, SRO GT World Challenge North America. Delighted to say during that period of time we're still the only manufacturer to win the famed Daytona Rolex 24 Hours 3 years in succession with that car. It was one of the highlights of my tenure there at Lamborghini. And then right at the end of my tenure, at the end of 2023, worked on the introduction and development of the now racing Lamborghini LMDH prototype. After 10, 11 years of doing that, it was time for a change of scene, and I'm delighted to say the phone rang once I got word out that I was interested in a new opportunity, and John Doonan, the president of IMSA, called me and asked if I'd be interested in coming over and heading up HSR, which is now, as you may well know, an IMSA-owned property and part of the NASCAR portfolio of brands, and naturally I leapt at the opportunity to... It's a really, really wonderful opportunity that I've been presented. David Hinton, my predecessor, has done an incredible job with the growth and the development of HSR, has left me the series, as we say in England, in rude health, and I couldn't be more grateful to be at the helm of HSR at this time.
Super. Now, for our listeners, see if I have this correct. So in Europe, they have, and I believe in the United States, we have Porsche Cup races, which is Porsche, and then you have the Ferrari Challenge. So basically what you did is help create a similar race, which is a Trofeo, which is the Lamborghini's version of it, correct?
Yes, you're exactly right. So it's, you know, in motorsport parlance, it's a single make series.
Right.
It is a series in North America that is sanctioned by IMSA.
Uh-huh.
But all Lamborghini Super Trofeo Evo 2s is the model derivative that races currently. Their season kicked off this past March at during the Sebring 12-hour weekend with 36 or so cars. So glad to see that series is in good health, and as you say, good competition for Porsche Carrera Cup, Ferrari Challenge, and now the new Mustang Challenge as well.
Well, now Aston Martin's got a series also, don't they?
Aston Martin's been talking about introducing a series for some time, but McLaren have just introduced a new single make series with their Acura. Which is based off the GT4 car. That series has been introduced in Europe, and I hear it may be coming to North America in the not-too-distant future.
So the Trofeo Lamborghinis, so they can basically race in their series as well as in, let's say, like the regular IMSA series of, let's say, Daytona, Sebring, and Watkins Glen, Laguna Seca, and these other racing series that we have there. So they can participate in their own series with the same cars as well as within IMSA, because back then it wasn't with
In actual fact, that car is not an homologated GT3 car.
It's, oh, it's not?
Again, in motorsport parlance, it's a cup car. And actually homologated as a GT2 car. So Stefan Rattel, the father, if you like, of GT3 sports car racing, introduced the new GT2 platform, which is a higher power, lower downforce platform of cars, of which there are a number of different manufacturers with GT2 cars. So this year, for example, there's a number of Huracan Super Trofeo Evo 2s competing in GT2 competition in SRO in North America. But Lamborghini is a brand maker car that is GT3 homologated, and that's the car that runs in the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship, Daytona, Sebring, and the such like.
Okay, so for our listeners, can you kind of distinguish the difference between a GT2 car and a GT3? Now, I'm very familiar with Porsches, obviously, and their GT2 and GT3 cars. So make the comparison within the Lamborghini brand as far as
Think of it like a ladder, both in terms of cost and performance.
Mm-hmm.
So to give you an idea on cost front, I think the current pricing on a Super Evo 2 is about $335,000, but a GT3 car, GT3 Huracan car, will cost you over $600,000. So that's just the cost of the car. Then the running costs of the car are considerably more. The technology involved in the GT3 platforms, again, is considerably more than the GT2. The nomenclature, of course, is somewhat upside down for the casual observer. You'd think that GT2 would be higher up the hierarchy than GT3, but those are the cards we're dealt, unfortunately.
Okay, well, then it's the opposite with Porsche, because a GT2 is more valuable, a more expensive car than a GT3, if I remember
As a street car, yes, you're right.
As a
street car, yes, you're right.
So what is the objective of these class races, you know, Ferrari, Porsche, Lamborghini, now McLaren, possibly Aston Martin and Ford? What is the goal there? Because they're basically, I mean, some people might say, you know what, it's real expensive spec racing. But so is it more of a marketing thing? Are they basically test beds? Is it more for privateers to get into racing and then ultimately move up to IMSA racing? I mean, what is the?
I mean, you've hit all the nails on the head. So all of the above is the answer. So first and foremost, you know, Lamborghini, as you so astutely played in your introduction there with the Ferrari film,
yes,
and the Lamborghini film. You know, Ferruccio Lamborghini was vehemently opposed to motorsport, which is why he started Lamborghini. He thought that Enzo Ferrari was spending far too much time and attention on his racing endeavors. But the single make series are a way of engaging customers, and it is fully customer racing in the brand. Okay. And Lamborghini started their motorsport program only in 2009. So in the years that Ferrari, for example, as well as many of the other famed sports car manufacturers, it's the new kid on the block, but has achieved a tremendous amount of success in a very short amount of time. But back to your original question, you know, the manufacturers, they use them as marketing platforms. They absolutely do use them as technology development platforms. So the Huracan STO, which is a street car, a lot of the aerodynamic and performance work for that came born from the racetrack into the street car development. And then not only is it a way of engaging those customers in your brand, but then also using that single make platform as a ladder then into your the next step on the motorsport racing ladder of GT3 racing, which, as I said, comes with a much higher price tag of competition. But all of the brands that participate in GT3 now are looking to single make to have that as a ladder as part of their portfolio of their motorsport offering.
Now, is there the potential that Ferrari and Lamborghini and Porsche and Mustang and McLaren may all be on the track at the same time for a specific race designed for those cars?
Well, that's really where GT2 was born.
Okay.
So Mercedes, for example, has a GT2 car. They don't have a single make series, but they have a GT2 car. The Cup cars compete, for example, in some of the races like the Nürburgring.
Mm-hmm.
The 24 hours of Nürburgring, the Cup cars will be on that. But in terms of single make competition, no one has done that yet. And I dare say, and I know I'm a little bit biased given my previous tenure, but the Super Trofeo is the fastest of all of the single make series in the world. So it'll be a little bit of an unfair competition.
Okay, I'm okay with that. Christopher, do you go by Chris or Christopher?
Chris is fine.
Okay. So, Chris, give us a little background on yourself in your Wonder Bread days, as we say here in the United States. When you were younger, where did your interest and your fascination with cars begin? How old were you? What was your first car? You know, things like that.
Great question. So, was a terrible expression, but was a military brat, I think, is the expression that's used over here in America.
So oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. My father served in His Majesty's Armed Forces, we traveled the world, lived in Hong Kong, Singapore, Cyprus, Germany, you name it. And glad to say, you know, he reached quite a high senior rank. I think it's a 2-star brigadier here in North America parlance.
Okay.
And along with that, he became head of procurement for the British Armed Forces, and we were often, as part of that, very fortunate to be invited to Formula One races.
Oh.
So Renault, who was a big supplier to the armed forces, Unipart is probably not a brand name that's known over here, but big supplier to the armed forces. And I was very, very blessed as a young boy to travel with my father to a number of Formula One races. And to name drop just a moment, sat at lunch with Sir Frank Williams and Nigel Mansell on the day that Nigel won the British Grand Prix at Silverstone. So that was enough for any young boy to be tipped over the edge, to be fascinated by this crazy world of motorsport. In terms of my own motorsport career, if you like, it started late, but my interest in cars started really from the point where I could sit on my father's knee and turn the steering wheel, as so many young boys do. I think I was age 12 when I bought my first car. Embarrassed somewhat to say, but it was a Fiat 126, which is a rear-engined Fiat car. It was a successor to the Fiat 500. And I was 12 years old, and I bought it. I think I paid £50 for it. And to my father's horror, put it in the garage and tore the thing apart, really. And that's how I taught to turn wrenches and understand how motors worked and the such like. Graduated almost to the other spectrum then. After that, my next car was a Triumph Spitfire. And actually learned to drive in that. We were living at the time on a disused RAF base and was able to drive without going on public roads from our house in England to the disused runways. And I got the Triumph Spitfire working and took myself out onto the runway and taught myself to drive stick. I think that was at the age of 13 or 14 or something. So I've never looked back. And delighted to say, fast forward now, I have a 14-year-old son, and he's learning to drive stick, of course, because I think that's the only proper way of driving a motor car.
Oh, absolutely. On a side note, Nigel Mansell used to live here in Clearwater, by the way.
He did. I remember, yeah.
Yes, and he was an avid golfer. My in-laws actually knew him back in the day because he used to play at the Bel Air Country Club. Let me ask you this. Okay, so then, now that you're in a little bit more involved and time's moved on a little bit, do you collect any classic cars? Do you drive any classic cars? Do you do any vintage racing yourself since you're involved with HSR?
I took the decision, nearly 15 years ago. I was given the opportunity to drive an Huracan GT3 car on the track in Europe. I think it was Imola. And I had so much fun and so much enjoyment that I got out the car and I vowed I'm never going to do that again, because I knew that I was never going to be able to afford to do it. Somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but no, I don't have a car collection. I'm so fortunate with the job that I've had and the career that I've had. I've driven just about everything. I don't have many cars on the bucket list that I haven't driven. Look at me now. You know, it's a good segue, but heading into the MIDI this weekend at Road Atlanta, we've got 290-plus cars on the entry list. Of every variety of car that any sports car racing enthusiast would dream to see. And I do that for a job. I'm the luckiest guy alive. So no. Long way of answering your question, but no, don't have a car collection. Very, very boring. We have a Volkswagen Golf GTI that my son is learning to drive on. We have a Mini, it's a 2012, I think, Mini that's on a stick. And I'm very blessed that I get a company car as my SUV choice, but No great car collection, I'm afraid.
Okay. Were you ever into motorcycles? I got to ask you that because, you know, a lot of car guys are motorcycles.
Big into motorcycles.
Really?
Ended up with 5 or 6 motorcycles up until the birth of my son. Then I will add, completely of my own doing, had quite a nasty accident in Tennessee. As a lot of motorcyclists will attest to, but I'll raise my hand and say it was my own fault. And actually got rid of all my motorcycles, but then only last March got back into motorcycling, bought a wonderful BMW K1600 GT, their big Grand Tourer 1600, and fell back in love with motorcycling. So that's my that's one of my ways of escaping, if you like.
Wow. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about, or a lot about, HSR. So now that you, how did you kind of get involved with the HSR? Were you obviously, because of racing, you're fairly probably familiar with HSR in the first place. And so how did that happen for you, as far as outside of the fact that the manager called you? How were you kind of like the right guy for the job in your eyes?
Yeah, so 2 years ago, HSR was purchased by IMSA.
Right.
I have known John Doonan, the president of IMSA, for a number of years, not only during his tenure at IMSA as he is now, but also prior to when he was with Mazda. running their motorsports division there. John and I have become good close friends. I've obviously spent the last nearly 12 years working in the IMSA paddock. I've been working in almost exclusively Lamborghini Quattrocorsa is in a customer racing environment. And as I say, when David Hinton, my predecessor at HSR, decided to step down at the end of last year, my phone rang and John and I talked it through, and I like to think that they've, you know, I don't have the long storied history in vintage and historic sports car racing, but I do have more than a decade plus of customer racing, and at the end of the day, that's the business we're in, is customer racing. I'm hugely blessed that David stayed on in an advisory capacity. He's still on the board of HSR, so his wealth of knowledge and experience is not gone to waste. And of course, I've got a wonderful staff at HSR, all of whom have remained on since David's departure, and the series is just going from strength to strength. We're so fortunate and very excited for the future.
So let's talk a little bit about HSR now. So we've got the MIDI coming up. Tell us the backstory on the MIDI. A lot of people don't know it. I know it, but I want you to tell it.
So the 46th anniversary of the MIDI is this coming weekend. One of the longest tenured vintage and historic sports car racing events on the calendar in North America. It's a tremendous property that HSR is proud to look after, and I mean look after. Every day in my job, you know, there are decisions that we look to make, and we look them not only looking forward and focusing forward, but also respecting our heritage and our past as we must. So if you get the opportunity to come to the MIDI this weekend, I highly encourage you to. It's one of, if not the largest, vintage and historic sports car racing events. We've got everything for every fan. So from stock cars, we've got a field of 40 vintage and historic stock cars that'll be competing. Our featured mark this year is cars from Japan. So you'll see everything from Nissan prototypes to Datsun 570s and everything in between, you name it. There's something for everybody. And the way the series is structured is the cars are classified into groups, and our Group 2 and Group 3 are the small bore and medium bore vintage and historic cars, all the way up to Group 11, which are the more modern and postmodern cars. They'll compete against each other in their own group, and then come together in some feature races during the weekend.
So how long does an average race last?
They're 30-minute races, okay. Which is, you know, for solo driver in the age of the product is plenty long enough, as they say.
Okay.
It's plenty long enough. We have a two-hour endurance race as well for our – it's a new product for us this year, the HSR PC, the Prototype Challenge, which is exclusively for LMP3 cars. So those cars on Saturday evening will be doing a two-driver, two-hour endurance race. And then on top of that, during the race weekend, for select cars, we have what are called the BRM Chronocast Endurance, and those are one-hour races. So again, about customer racing, we have something for everybody. Where the sprint races, the WeatherTech sprint races, are 30 minutes. The BRM Enduros are 1 hour. And then, as I said, the LMP3s will top off the weekend on Saturday evening with a two-hour endurance.
Okay. Well, just on a side note, I actually got my racing certification, my racing license, at Road Atlanta. So Road Atlanta is actually one of my favorite courses, mainly because it goes up but down. It's got crazy turns. They did away with turn 12. 11's still there, but it's an amazing racetrack because, in my opinion, it's very challenging and very technical. And it's a long course, too. It's a beautiful road course, and so it should
be. And I can tell you, I loaded into the track this morning. We start our setup for the event, and I don't think I've ever seen the circuit more beautifully presented. The Georgia at this time of year, you know, it's beautifully green.
Yes,
the grass has been manicured to within an inch of its life. The buildings have all got a fresh coat of paint on them. The place just looks absolutely tremendous at the moment, and I hope we're going to, well, I know we will, we'll put on a great show for the fans. Ticket sales are already exceeded last year's ticket numbers, which is terrific. Campers are coming out, motorhomes, people coming and staying in tents. It's a real festival of vintage and historic sports car racing.
Now, here's a question I have, because vintage racing, I've been involved in it or attended vintage races since probably the early 80s, and I've done a fair amount of club racing, and I had an HSR license, which I kept active until the early 2000s, so, and I ran one race at Sebring, and most of the stuff I did was club racing outside of that anyway, but as far as marketing and getting viewerships and attendance, now that IMSA's involved, what are the prospects of IMSA get vintage racing, HSR in particular, getting TV time, airtime, you know, where they get more exposure? Because quite frankly, I would think that it's very, very exciting because the cars are nostalgic. A lot of us can understand them. A lot of us can relate to the cars because you see the car and say, oh, yeah, well, that looks like a street car that I can identify with. Where, you know, most of the racing cars today are so built out with, you know, ground effects and aero kits and or their prototypes. I mean, it's, they don't really look like something you'd see on the street, so they're harder to identify. And, of course, in the past, people always used to say, well, the reason I like vintage racing and racing back in the day is I could identify with that Ford, that Chevy, that Mustang, that Porsche, that MGB, that Triumph Spitfire, or, you know, Griffith or whatever it might be.
Well, you're absolutely right. And without giving away all of our secrets for 2025, maybe I could share with your listeners some of the exciting developments to look for in 2025. Bear in mind, you know, I've only been in the job for 4 months. But to your point, leveraging the IMSA platform, I see as a key opportunity for us going forward. And if we were to hypothesize for a moment, just imagine what a weekend where the classic 12 hours, so we run a series of classic endurance races that somewhat mirror the IMSA properties of their modern racing. But imagine a weekend where the Sebring Classic 12 hour could be the weekend before the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championships 12-hour, and maybe we could bring what is already one of our existing properties, the Pistons and Props concept, where we bring vintage aircraft and vintage cars to the racetrack, and we put on, let me say, a Speed Weeks festival of sports car racing, where people could come and enjoy vintage and historic sports car racing and historic aircraft show the weekend before the IMSA Sebring 12-hour. So, you know, don't be too surprised if in 2025 you see some news along that front in 2025, because we're actively working on plans for exactly what you said. So we can then have an offering that is unique in the motorsports world in North America, and create, whilst we wouldn't want to mirror it, but maybe create our own, for example, Goodwood Festival of Speed, something like that. I think the time is right in North America for a product like that, and HSR are uniquely positioned to be able to put on such a show.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because the first thing that comes to my mind, not that I've been to Goodwood, but obviously Monterey Collector Car Week, and so you've got the Rolex Challenge, you've got all those auctions and all the other festivities taking place, and it's become a week-long event, and to actually have something like that on the Eastern Seaboard and at Sebring, the oldest racetrack in America, I think that's an ideal situation.
Exactly. Well, I'm glad you agree.
Well, you know, if you need an announcer or something like that, you know, keep me in mind. I'll throw my hat in the ring there. You know,
there we go. There we go.
But anyway, well, I know you're at a meeting that you have to attend right now. But for the listeners now, if people want to find out more about HSR and this upcoming event here at the Walter Mitty at Atlanta race, road race, Atlanta Raceway. It's called Michelin now. It's got a different name.
Michelin Raceway Road Atlanta is the correct terminology. And anyone wants to find out any more about this upcoming weekend, they can visit our website at www.hsrrace.com, and you'll see the live events page there, and click on the link to get tickets and get the schedule of activities for the weekend.
Okay. Now, are there any cars there in particular that you kind of that you know, kind of like are close to your heart? Something that's vintage, that's classic, that's that you really fancy, or something that you think is really interesting that you want to see do well?
Naturally, coming from the UK, there's a couple of cars that took my fancy at our season opener in Sebring. There's a beautiful Jaguar XJ120 that I fell in love with, and I've seen some photos. They weren't in Sebring, but there are some beautifully prepared Ford Escorts that are coming out to come and race at the MIDI. So those are a couple of cars that I've really got my eye on and are very close to my heart.
The other thing I was going to ask too, and share with us, this is not just cars that participate in these races aren't just from the United States. Some of these cars come from around the country, from around the world. True, right?
Not only from the East Seaboard, but we've got cars coming in from California. We've got cars coming in from Canada. We run a classic 24-hour race at Daytona every year. And we get 20, 30, 40 cars shipped over from Europe for those classic endurance races as well. So this is, vintage and historic sports car racing is really on the rise right now. And we're delighted to be right at the center of it.
Super. Well, Christopher, we're just about up against the flag, or the checkered flag, as they say. But I'm delighted to... that you could take the time out and share with us some information on HSR, a little bit about yourself, and I certainly look forward to making a trek up to Atlanta. It's about an 8-hour run from here to Road Atlanta, but I've done it many times before, and no reason I shouldn't be able to do it this year. And again, thank you very much, and all the best to you, and congratulations on your new position.
Thank you so much. It's an absolute pleasure, and look forward to seeing you in Atlanta.
All right. All the best. Thank you very much. Good day, evening.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
So, listeners, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to Nostalgic Radio and Cars. Don't forget, every Tuesday between 7 and 8 p.m. on the TAN Talk Radio Network. You can find us right here in downtown Clearwater, WTN. The MIDI is a historic race. It's obviously named after somebody, a Walter MIDI, and who was a race car driver at the time, if my history serves me correctly. The HSR cars run both cars that have historic significance, as well as cars that are kind of vintage cars, but are kind of recreations of true race cars. Now, the comparison to Laguna Seca is those cars have to have real-life race history. That's the difference on that track. And there's an organization called SVRA, which is also out there. But now, because they want to get more attendance and more people involved, more participants involved, HSR, as well as SVRA, are now opening up classes for newer cars. And it used to be the cutoff was like 1972. Well, now they said, well, you know what? There's a lot of 1972 cars that are out there that aren't being raced anymore, so we need to get some newer cars in there. And again, like we talk about in the classic car industry, there's a generational shift going on. Well, there's a generational shift going on in racing. But HSR is an amazing race organization. They've got some great people working there. The cars that are there are absolutely incredible. If you get a chance, like I said, they show up at Road Atlanta, in the Southeast, Road Atlanta, Daytona, and Sebring. So if you get a chance, check out HSR. It's a great, great, great organization. Some amazing cars. It'll take you back in the time, because cars, classic cars, are time machines. So on that note, what do I got? We got about a minute left there. One minute. Should I keep blabbing, or should we just go ahead and fire up the stair? Keep talking, wrap it up. We're good? Okay, so anyway. All right, so again, I want to see all my guys out there. Don't stare at your cars. Drive your cars. Get out there, and of course, we all say that. You know, get something simple and work on it. Like, I'm actually working on a 1973 Pinto that I almost had running the other day, but then a little fitting broke, so now I got to go mess with that. But that's okay, because these old cars, they're mechanical, and you can fix them. Anyway, on that note, I want to thank all my listeners for tuning in. I want to see you guys out there driving cars. Stay safe, drive carefully, and love your family.